710 Keel, Mike and McLean, Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline this morning. Do I say interim acting or just water director? Brandon Snead joining us, doing a great job. Brandon, good morning.
Good morning, Mike and Aaron. How are y'all?
Good. Seen some posts on social media. Of course, we know it's all true there. About online water billing glitches with the city of Shreveport. What's going on? Is there any truth to it?
I've not heard this. I don't get on social media too often. Our media team does do it for us and keeps up with what's going on. I spoke with my superintendent of customer service, and she said she has not been receiving any widespread reports or any issue like that. The only thing that did happen, but that happened about a year ago, is when we switched over to a new payment portal. And if we sent out notices for your ACH draft, if you were on that kind of auto payment, to switch over, because we can't do that because we have no access to it. And if they didn't switch over, there may have been an issue there.
It seemed to be something like they thought they had paid their bill, and it was not being credited in the system. That was kind of what the complaint was. And it was in a neighborhood group, and I'm not sure. They just need to contact customer service if they're having issues, correct?
Absolutely. Yes, yes, ma'am. If they would just contact us, we'd be happy to work through that and see what's going on.
The other question about bills is people are getting bills that are way higher than they used to be. Can you help explain that?
Yes, ma'am. There are going to be some issues like that. And they're not really an issue. What happens is with the older meters that we had in, they were mechanical meters. Mechanical meters, their efficiency fades over time. And if they were a really old meter, these new AMI meters read exact. They are so precise. So the billing is accurate now. So there are some areas or some homes that may, or businesses that may see an increase off of it. But, you know, if there's an issue, they can call us. We can come out. We can check the meter to make sure there aren't any issues on our end, and we'd be happy to do that.
So with the old meters, you were being billed like an average or an estimate, essentially?
No, ma'am. No, they were still reading, and there's a dial, and there was a number system. They were just mechanical. And so anything mechanical over time, it's just the efficiency fades.
Okay.
So has everybody been switched over to the new meters?
No, sir. We have approximately 51,000 in the ground, and we've got to get to around 75,000. So we're close. We're just not there yet.
Do you have an option? Let's say somebody's bill used to be 60 and it's now over 100. Do you have a mechanism in place where they can, rather than give you the lump sum, they can pay you over time? They can set up a payment plan with you?
Absolutely. We have payment plans, and there's a formula that our customer service people walk through. There's a percentage. I think it's 20% you have to put down, and then we can spread that out. Absolutely.
Now, your online payment company, is it Paystar? Is that what it is?
That's the new one.
And there have not been glitches with that, to your knowledge?
To my knowledge. I mean, she's digging into it, too, just to look through and see if she's getting anything this morning. And I'm glad you mentioned the Facebook neighborhood groups, because I'll have Lyman, our media manager, go through and kind of see what's going on and reach out to some folks.
Okay.
Talking with Brandon Snead, Interim Water and Sewage Director. Brandon, we were talking earlier about the water towers, and we know Shreveport has three waters, and they're going through, and they're all being run. One has been finished, the one out off of 49, that's been finished, correct?
Yes, sir.
And then there's the next one over by St. Vincent?
Well, no, we're at the West Shreveport, the one out off of 20 and west of town. That one is offline, and it is under rehab as we speak.
Oh, okay. I thought that was going to be the last one.
Well, we had to do some maneuvering for pressure issues and just to make sure we were ready for St. Vincent, because it's in the heart of the city. So we were able to take West Shreveport offline first, and they are out there. You'll start eventually seeing a big tent go up around it. Right now, they're in the inside of it doing some repair work, and then the tent will go over, and that's when they'll be sandblasting and doing the coatings.
So they have to empty that thing completely out and to rehab mm-hmm. it. So what will residents, will it affect a certain area? What will they be seeing? Is it going to be a lower pressure?
No, we have valved. We did a complete study before we took the tank offline, to ensure that we would not see any pressure issues. And we studied it with the tank offline for a period of about 2 weeks. And when we were able to be comfortable with it, that's when we decided to permanently take it offline. And we've monitored that. We have data loggers at different points of the system in the West Shreveport area, and we have not received any issues of pressure complaints.
I'm just a big nerd, apparently, because that's exciting to me. Mm-hmm. How long do you expect this?
I think it's fascinating. I love it.
I really do, too. How long do you think it's expected to take before it's back online?
The goal is to have it online, back online, sometime around before April, on or around April.
And then you move to the third one.
Then next winter or fall, we will take St. Vincent offline. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, Mike asked a very good question and did a little research yesterday about the water. Somebody said, is the water in those towers coming from the treatment plant? So the water in the towers, explain how it gets there and what the process is.
Okay, well, I can do that. But the treatment plant, of course, treats the water from Cross Lake, and from there, it's boosted from pumps at the plant, and it boosts into the system. And those towers or fields, they're based on static head. So when the system doesn't need that much pressure, that's how those tanks fill. And then when the system needs more pressure, the tanks will empty, and it constantly cycles like that.
So it doesn't water and fill up from the rainwater.
No, sir. We wouldn't be in compliance if we did that.
No, absolutely. That's just fascinating to me how those work.
What is impacting the pressure? Because we hear Councilman Grayson Butcher repeatedly say his residents in some of his district have low water pressure. What is impacting that?
We are studying that, but we have made improvements with some of our studies that we're doing out there in the area. We have made improvements. We're still seeing a little dip in the early morning hours. Our engineering team have put out more data loggers, and they're studying that. We hope to have something by the end of the year together for a plan to permanently fix that issue. But we are seeing a lot better pressure in those areas, and knock on wood, I've not received any calls or complaints recently since we've made some changes.
I will say I was out at breakfast the other day where I normally get my water, and it has always had kind of a little muddy taste. For the first time this past weekend, the water tasted delicious.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear that. Mm-hmm. We just rehabbed our carbon silo, and we just finished that project. And carbon, of course, is the major component we use, one of them, for taste and odor. And the rehab was just completed a few weeks ago.
Fantastic. Well, Brandon, we know you stepped out of a meeting to talk with us. We'll let you get back to it. And we appreciate that very much. And keep up the good work.
Well, glad to talk to you guys. Thank y'all, and have a great day.
Thanks.
You too, Brandon. Brandon Sneed, Director of Water and Sewage, Shreveport, Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.
More breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Saturday, one of the guys that works for the Salvation Army is in my Sunday school class.
Mm-hmm.
And he sent out an email going, hey, guys, I need some bell ringers.
Oh, okay.
Saturday. It was the first day.
All right.
For the holiday season. And I'll say holiday season before Thanksgiving.
Okay.
Because after that, it's Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
So I was going to don the full Santa regalia.
Ah, that'd be cool.
But it was too hot.
Too hot for Santa.
It was too daggum hot.
So Santa put on his Bermudas?
He did. And I have a really cool Santa, a bright red Hawaiian shirt.
Oh, cool.
With Santa on it and stuff. So, and a Santa hat. And so that's what
Santa brings in some dough.
It was awesome.
I bet.
It was really cool. I was out there from like noon to two.
Where were
at
y'all?
Sam's.
Okay, cool.
Sam's Club on Uri.
I think one of my girlfriends was out there with her work wife, and she go out, and they go out and ring the bell on the opening weekend.
Oh, okay.
I think they were there. Maybe at Target, too. I'm not sure which place they were at, but yeah.
Yeah, so I left that, and you're on your feet. I was on my feet for 2 hours.
Oh.
So I got a couple more errands and ran. I got home, and about 3 o'clock, one of my buddy texted me, my best friend said, dude, Deuce McAllister signing autographs at, what is it, Total Wine or something?
Yeah.
Brand new store on Uri.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife was like, you got to go.
You got to go.
So I put on a Saints shirt and hopped on the bike and got my Deuce jersey that I've had for 30 years. I don't know how long ago it was. I've got a Deuce McAllister. It was the retro jersey.
Very cool.
It was very cool. McAllister on the back.
And, got him to sign it?
Got in line.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Now, what was he doing there? Is he part owner? Or?
It was a promotion sponsored by Crown Royal, apparently.
Oh, and he's one of their ambassadors.
Yeah, he had a big Crown Royal shirt on. He was in a throne right by the front door with Crown Royal, and
nice.
It was all purple. Yeah, it's very nice.
Did you ask him if he could suit up for the rest of the year, please?
Yeah. He looked like he still could.
Yeah, we need him. We need him.
Aaron, I was not expecting him to be as nice and as gracious as he was.
That's so good to hear. I love hearing that.
He was just as nice. I mean, he signed. my best friend's wife was already in line with a crown. Obviously, it was Crown Royal. So she had a box with, and it's a special Saints edition Crown Royal with a black bag.
Oh, nice.
And she looked at me and she didn't know I was going to be there because.
Oh.
And she has this box and she goes, well, Merry Christmas.
She got it signed for you.
She got it for me.
Oh, that's so cool.
But Deuce, he signed the box. He signed the black bag. He signed the bottle. He was, he just couldn't have been nicer. Got up, took pictures with us.
Man, you got three things to sell on eBay now.
Four.
Oh, yeah, the jersey. Don't sell them.
I'm not selling. Are you kidding? I'm not selling any of them.
That's so
Heck
cool.
Heck no. It was a lot of fun because he was so nice.
That's great. I love hearing that.
I know it. I do too. And I wasn't expecting him to be that nice. Caddo Parish Commissioner Chris Crackman going to join us after the news, bottom of the hour. A sad occasion. A tragic event over the weekend in Vivian, Louisiana. Shreveport Police, Vivian officer losing his life. We'll talk with Commissioner Crackman next. 101.7 FM, 710 Keel.
Best stories of the day with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
County Parish Commissioner Chris Crackman joining us coming up just after the break, addressing the tragedy in Vivian. Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.
Back with more of Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Well, you've probably heard at this point, Vivian police officer was shot and killed, issuing a warrant. A man was barricaded inside his house and was later arrested, charged with second-degree murder now. Caddo Parish Commissioner of that district, Chris Crackman, joining us. Chris, first of all, thank you for jumping on with us. We appreciate it.
No, you bet. How are y'all?
Well, we're doing okay. How's the town of Vivian this morning?
Well, you know, it's pretty somber with grief, and I believe it will be for some time.
Did you know Mark Brock?
I did not. We had crossed paths several times. Matter of fact, last I saw him was the homecoming parade for North Caddo. I didn't know him personally. I do know the family of his fiance.
Last night they held a candlelight vigil at the stadium there in North Caddo. Describe that for us. That I mean, just the grief and the love of everyone coming together had to be kind of emotional.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's a shame. You know, when folks are living, I don't think they realize how many lives they touch. You know, and last night just showed how many lives that Officer Brock had touched. You know, there were hundreds of people in the bleachers, and I think they had everything set up, you know, somewhere around the 30-yard line or so, but the bleachers were packed.
We have a, I have a retired Shreveport police officer in my Sunday school class, and we were talking about this yesterday, and he said, guys, you know, this affects the entire town of Vivian. It's a very, of course, a small community. It's a very close-knit community.
Absolutely. And the thing is a young man that's this unique is very, very rare. He's 25 years old. He's a T-ball coach. He's on the board of directors of the Vivian Athletic Association. He's an assistant coach for North Caddo, and he's a police officer. I mean, for somebody that young with no children of his own to be such a volunteer and pillar is such a rarity. So it's not just the loss of a good officer. It's a good loss of a liaison of everything that is good within our communities.
The other thing that people think about, we know how big the Shreveport Police Department, the Bossier Police Department is. The Vivian Police Department is a small unit. How many officers do they have, Chris?
I'm unsure of how many they have. I think you can count them on both hands. There's not very many. And like y'all said, you know, it's a very small, tight-knit community. Everybody knows everybody. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is going to touch and affect our communities up here for a very, very long time.
How can folks help Mark Brock's family? I know there's been a meal train, some other things set up. What's the best way to help?
Right, there have, and I think there's actually been an account set up to donate to the family to get them through this hard time, as well as his fiance, I believe. And I want to say the Vivian Chamber of Commerce has been sharing everything on their social media. So if everybody would jump on there and check that out, because I'm sure it's going to take a while. Mm-hmm. For the family to get back on their feet after something like this.
Talking with Caddo Parish Commissioner Chris Crackman, whose district Vivian is in. Chris, has there been any announcement on the services yet?
No, sir, there hasn't.
Then that'll be one of those things where so many law enforcement folks will come for that from all around the state. I assume the sheriff's office will help patrol Vivian at that time. This is just one of those things that in law enforcement, they turn out, right?
Oh, absolutely. And that's I would like to mention, you know, Friday night we were gearing up to go to the playoff game at Northwood High School. And, you know, I'm standing in my front yard and I'm hearing siren after siren after siren and my heart is breaking. I'm on the phone with the mayor. We're trying to figure out what we can do and what's going on. But I say that to say this, you know, there were officers from so many different enforcement agencies, all the way from Minden. There were officers from Minden that came, Bossier, Life Air, North Caddo Medical Center, the Sheriff's Department. I mean, a lot of these agencies really knocked it out of the park. There's 9 municipalities up here, and I think there was an officer from every single agency. If somebody had a badge on their chest Friday night, they were in Vivian. And so it was the response was outstanding, and I cannot thank those guys enough.
Chris, we thank you for jumping on with us, and our thoughts and prayers are with those in Vivian this morning.
You bet.
All right, guys. Thank you all so much.
Thanks.
Thank you. Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 KEEL.
Back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 KEEL.
Well, they made it. State Fair of Louisiana had a full run, Aaron.
Yes.
With, I think, zero rain.
I don't think there was a drop. And no real big incidents of anything to note. I they're going to have to hit records. It's going to be record numbers.
I can't wait to see the numbers.
I know. I'm excited for them.
We had Russell Adams in late last week. It gave us an update. They had a big day yesterday with honoring veterans and the veterans parade yesterday. So yeah, congratulations. I'm glad it went well.
Yeah. And the only complaint I saw about the state fair was the prices. The prices for the food was a little, somebody said the turkey legs were $20, which was a little bit pricey.
A little bit?
Yeah.
Wow.
And, you know, I don't know. I didn't go, so I can't swear to that. But I had a lot of people were posting about the $20 turkey legs. And I thought, you know, the costs have gone up on everything. And they have to recoup their costs somehow. I did see this morning coming in, I did see SPD over there by the where the Kearney people were living, you know, in their trailers.
Okay.
SPD was over there kind of posted up just to make sure they're all safe as they get up this morning and start to get moving and move out. But they got to take the rides down first and do all that. But huge run for the fair.
This is generally, I don't know about this particular carnival, but this is one of the last runs on the season.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them go into the winter break from this point.
Yes, yes.
So I don't know. I don't know if they're moving on to another fair or mm-hmm. if this is like the end of the run for the year.
I'm not sure.
For
but
a lot of them,
they had a huge crowd yesterday for the Veterans Celebration. They had the parade at 2:00. And all kind of dignitaries were out there then, and it was free to get in for all veterans and their mm-hmm. families. So they had a big crowd yesterday, and what a gorgeous day it was.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, you can't order days like that when you're having your big day at the fair. So kudos to the state fair. They had an incredible run this year.
Now, Baton Rouge, they had an election Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't even renew millages? What?
Yeah, they turned down 3 tax renewals and voted them down. Only 19% of the voters showed up. It's now cutting time in Baton Rouge. And I don't mean just, you know, a few little things. We're talking about jobs and some services. The mayor's going to hit the ground rolling this morning in Baton Rouge, rolling out a list of things that are going to be cut. And library services, all kinds of services could be facing cuts. Just a dismal turnout at the polls. If all city workers had just turned out to vote.
To save your own job?
Yeah. But again, there are a lot of city workers that don't live in the city. So, I mean, I had family that didn't live in the city but worked for the city of Baton Rouge. So that's pretty common, too. So we will talk to Scott Hughes about that after 7.
Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel. Be sure to download the free Keel app. Well, this you might be wondering, why are we talking about a Baton Rouge election? Well, This is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
3 propositions on the ballot for Saturday in Baton Rouge. 1 for the library, 1 for mosquito abatement. Oh my gosh. Baton Rouge.
Yeah.
And then another one on Council on Aging. Now these were up for renewal.
Not new taxes.
Not new. These are up for renewal. And only 19% of voters showed up.
Mm-hmm.
Scott Hughes, Shreveport political analyst on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline. Scott, first of all, good morning. Thank you. Why do we think only 19%? Why couldn't they get the voters out?
Well, several reasons. First of all, 19%, to be honest, in what's called an off-cycle election, this was the only thing on the ballot, taxes. That's not considered bad, sadly. We'd all like to see more voters. But that said, there was a few things going on in Baton Rouge, including an LSU football game, an early kickoff. And then there was also just this voters. A lot of people don't want to go vote against a library tax, but they don't want to vote for taxes.
But it was a renewal. Is this a failure on the Baton Rouge administration for not selling the point that we need these renewed?
The general consensus, and again, we've only had a day or two to post-analyze this. We haven't talked to a lot of folks, but it's generally viewed as either a vote of confidence on the mayor-president, brand-new mayor-president just got elected, or his plan. That is correct, Mike. I think that's a fair analysis. It is worth noting that these weren't simply renewals. These have been renewed. They're 10-year taxes. These were renewals and rededications. And so in doing that, they were doing two things. They were renewing existing taxes, but according to my research, they also were raising the cap. And that is common for some government entities. I know we're getting into math here, but you may have authorized a 3-mil tax 30 years ago, and now you're only pulling 1.9 of it. They were authorizing going up to the full millage approved levels, even though over the years they had not taxed the full levels. And then the other part that was highly controversial is they were reauthorizing them under the name of the three entities that you outlined, libraries, mosquitoes, and aging. But then they were pulling a lot of the money out of those departments and moving them over to the general fund to fund EBR's operations. EBR is running a deficit and has debt, and that's what the mayor was concerned about, not these three entities.
Now, the mayor has said, Mayor Sid Edwards has said today he will outline a package of cuts, which will likely include layoffs and cuts to services. How drastic do you anticipate that will be?
If he follows through on what he said leading up to the election, it could be fairly drastic. We're talking about he had set upwards of 400 jobs. So Baton Rouge is not that much bigger than Shreveport. So imagine the city of Shreveport. I'll be fair. Imagine the city of Shreveport announcing 300 job layoffs, 75% of that. That's probably what Baton Rouge is doing. Now, it is worth noting, these were renewals, as Mike said, in a sense. So these funds still are going to be collected for a couple years, and many think the mayor may have a chance to come back one more time with a different proposal, and we'll see if he does that. But underlying all of this is a huge financial problem in the city of Baton Rouge, in Baton Rouge, East Baton Rouge Parish, because it's a city parish form of government. And it's also being driven a lot, as we talked previously on the radio, with the St. George pressures. And so no one, and it's worth noting there were two other taxes in EBR that got dragged down on Saturday as well. Mm-hmm. The Zachary school system failed, and a fire renewal tax for a fire district failed by 20 votes with over 22,000 cast.
Mm. So you're saying that it will be funded for another couple of years, so there won't be immediate cuts?
I think the current funding goes at least through 26. I think these would have started in 27, the renewal part of the tax.
Mm-hmm,
the moving the money would have started immediately, and I think that's what some people were upset about. So I think you'll see a combination. I think the mayor will come out, Sid will come out, and probably announce some layoffs. It's kind of hard to threaten and then not follow through. I know it sounds draconian, but in political terms, if there's no response to this, I think the mayor is going to really have been undermined. This is viewed largely as a vote on the mayor and his administration. And so there's going to have to be some response to this, even if they come back with another plan. I'm told by people that live in Baton Rouge that the library fund is well funded. The library even may have excessive funds compared to some other library funds around the country. But if you're going to take half the mosquito funds and the Council of Aging funds, I think that's going to be a serious issue.
The library director, though, even came out this weekend and said they may have to cut back some programs that they do as a result. So they may not have as much money as some anticipate. Could that be an issue for Baton Rouge?
I think it's going to be an issue. And I forget the exact year, but a couple of years ago, Baton Rouge invested heavily in libraries. And many thought they may have overbuilt libraries. To be fair, they may have overbuilt libraries in an era when we were moving to more electronic, digital, et cetera. And they had some famous examples of some construction problems. So I'm not going to pretend I know the ins and outs of the library structure. I do think if you're talking 400 jobs there and you're going to see pain across a lot of departments, this is going to be a big political issue in Baton Rouge. And of course, one of the reasons that the mayor was trying to pull these dollars out of these parish-wide and these parish city departments to go to fund is they need police officers. They are woefully underpaying and woefully understaffed, and he's trying to increase the public security side. And so that's the other problem, is that didn't get fixed either. And so now we're looking at robbing Peter to not pay Paul. It's sort of a bad example.
In the big scheme of things, looking down on it from your political crystal ball, is this a swinging of the pendulum back? People are a little bit frustrated with the Republicans. He's a Republican mayor, and they're saying, we're ticked with how y'all are running things from the president all the way on down, and we're not giving you any more money. Could that be part of this, too?
Well, I think the big answer is yes. I think what we're seeing in Baton Rouge, many in Baton Rouge that live there say the surprise is not this vote. The surprise was when Sid got elected. Some looked back and said that was sort of a shocking election, that East Baton Rouge Parish, Baton Rouge, would elect a Republican mayor. It was you know, little eyebrows went up on that. And now he's had about a year to be there, and many are questioning his leadership, that this was his first plan out. This actually wasn't his first plan. I think he did come, in fairness, almost immediately he came with a tax rededication renewal that got shot down. And this was plan B. So now he's going to be on to plan C. But yes, this is definitely viewed by the Baton Rouge voters as a, we can say a minor vote of no confidence, but these votes were 52-48. They were very close, 51-49. But they're going to have long-term repercussions for both the mayor and the parish city. And it shows again the dynamic of that breakaway part, St. George, because they do vote in parish-wide elections, even though they're now their own city.
What message does this send to Shreveport leaders?
I think the message that this sends, and if you couple, we talked about a week ago with New Orleans. New Orleans did get $125 million loan from the bond commission they have to pay back. I think this sends a message that you really need to, A, be looking farther out. You just can't come to the voters quickly and say, do this, because the voters need a lot of confidence. There was no trust. That's the term you heard on all sides. There was no trust in this bond election. I think we saw Shreveport pass a large bond election a couple of years ago after several failed bond elections because of the trust issue. And I think you need to build trust with your voters, but you need to be paying attention to these long-term issues, because a lot of municipalities under the water have a lot of issues that are growing. Here in Shreveport, we can't hide. We have some big ones. We have water and sewer, and we have some structural problems. Recently, they announced some far-out problems with our pension plans, you know, maybe 2040, but that's not that far out when you start looking at 10-year bond cycles.
It goes by fast.
Pay attention. Yes, sir.
Scott, thank you so much. We appreciate you jumping on with us this morning.
Oh, glad to be here. And I think I'll close with this here. And I think the immediate thing it says for Shreveport, for Bossier City, and for a lot of our entities is what we talked about last week. Maybe we're not as bad off as we think we are in some of these big structural issues. Baton Rouge and New Orleans have those. We're not laying anybody off this year. Shreveport just adopted its budget. Congratulations to them.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Thank you, Scott. Have a good morning. 101.7 FM, 710 Keel, Mike and McCarty.
Breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Vivian Mayor Ronnie Festivan on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline. Mike and McCarty.
Good morning, Mayor. This is a tough time for your town.
Yes, it is.
The candlelight vigil last night. Describe how that went.
Oh, it was great. We had a large crowd there and just had a tremendous outpouring. The family was there, had people to talk with the family. The family spoke. We had people that knew Mark real well, had either gone to school with him. We had his graduating class, many members of them there. And it was just really nice, really nice. And such an outpouring from the community to that family.
And just in case somebody hasn't heard, Officer Mark Brock was shot and killed over the weekend while issuing a warrant at a home. And he was 24 years old.
25, yeah.
25.
Yeah, 25.
Young man, very involved in the community. Is there any news on services yet, Vivian Mayor, Ronnie Festivan?
No, I have not been made aware of any services. I think those are still pending. As far as I know, we expect to know something here possibly early this week, maybe today or tomorrow, we're hoping.
Mayor, Vivian Police Force is not a large force. How many officers are on it? And tell us about Mark.
Well, we have about 11 police officers working on our police force. And Mark was just a great kid. He graduated from North Caddo High School and grew up. He was a Vivian boy. And He just dedicated, you know, even his young life. He was involved in Little League athletics, everything, coached Little League ball, and he was involved at the school. He did volunteer coaching for the football team, and he was just into everything. I say he was just a typical local hometown young man and just enjoyed his life giving back to the community.
What can people that are reaching out to us, what can they do to help Mark's family?
Well, we have several organizations that are involved in things, the Vivian Chamber of Commerce would be a great place to start and everything. And then there are New Beginnings, a flower and gift shop in Vivian. They can also contact Missy Moore there. There are several organizations that are putting together different activities and things. There are fundraisers going on at this time that you can donate to. You just really need to reach out to the different groups up there in Vivian.
How did you hear about this Friday evening, Mayor? I can't even imagine getting that phone call.
Well, yeah, you're exactly right, Aaron. We're no different than small communities. You hear it almost every time. And that is, no one ever expects anything like this to happen or anything. Hang on just one second, please. Okay.
We're talking with Vivian Mayor Ronnie Festivan, Mike and McCarty, the tragic loss of a Vivian police officer over the weekend.
Oh, so sad. Such a sad news. I assume you get the phone call from the police chief. How are you informed?
Well, I was just informed by one of the members of the police force, and we started from there. And like I say, you don't ever expect anything like this. The first thing you hear from small communities, of course, is we never expect anything like this to happen. To my knowledge, and you know, I was born and raised in Vivian, and I don't know of any police officer that we have ever lost in the line of duty in the town of Vivian. Mm-hmm. And Vivian's been around for a long time. So that makes it even more tragic, but I also think there's a reality to that, that you just never know. You just do not know what can happen. And our police officers, we hear this all the time. They put on that uniform every morning, and they go out there to serve our town and to serve the local community. And, you know, it's just so tragic when something like that comes up.
Well, and the suspect has been caught. Mm-hmm. And will be charged with second-degree murder.
Yes, sir. That's my understanding.
Mayor Ronnie Festivan, thank you so much for joining us, and our hearts and prayers are with you and the entire town of Vivian today.
Well, thank you so much for reaching out to us.
You bet.
Yes, sir. Thanks for talking with us. Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 KEO.
Back with McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 KEO.
Okay, tell me about what's coming up at 8 o'clock. 8:10 here.
Yes.
In studio.
There's a group of folks from Ukraine in town, including a 15-year-old who had been held by the Russians, I believe, for 2 years, and he's now free. His name is Daniel. I can't say the last name. They were at a church in Bossier Parish last night. They are going to be at a film release today at LSUS at 5 o'clock, but they're going to join us in studio coming up at just after 8 o'clock this morning to tell his story. I believe he and his mother were held in captivity, and they're now free, and they can talk about, you know, what he faced. They have a man from the Ukraine who speaks English, and so he will obviously be the translator, but... it's going to be a fascinating story. I'm really looking forward to hearing it.
That'll be coming up just after the news, top of the hour.
Mm-hmm. I want to hear from Ruben when we get back about his redneck weekend. Wait till you hear this story.
This is so
if
cool.
You think you're a redneck, you ain't got nothing on Ruben.
101.7 FM, 710 KEO.
Back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 KEO.
Pictures and video are available of this story.
So Ruben was going to go eat a chicken fried steak with mama. Is that right?
Yeah.
Grandmother.
With my mom and my grandma, I was going to go have lunch, have some chicken fried steak, and visit, have a nice, boring old Minden Sunday afternoon.
Drive up to Minden and spend some time with grandma.
My mom got a call from one of my uncles there. My family owns a big chunk of land.
Mm-hmm.
It's very swampy, right out there. And got a call. We've been seeing alligators out on the land for a while.
Okay.
Cool.
And one of the ones has to be, from everything I've heard, around 14 feet long.
Ooh.
Wow.
And apparently one of my uncles spotted it, saw it.
Oh, wow.
Swimming around. And then at some point they were trying to follow it and they lost it. So me and my mom, we go out to the land, see if we can spot it.
Mm-hmm.
And we get a call from my other uncle, who happens to have a plane. And he said, I'm going to try and spot it from the air. But if I'm flying, I can't really look. So I need somebody to look out.
Oh.
So that was me and my mom.
So y'all get in this Tinker Toy plane.
It's
looks
not
like
a Tinker Toy. It was actually a nice, it was a Cessna. It wasn't like.
I don't know planes. It's kind of a prop plane. It's one of those planes that you see that'll have like the big, big boat feet on it.
Yeah.
Okay. Land in water, except
pontoons.
It's got wheels.
It's older than me, Ruben. It's
It's got ashtrays in it. It's kind of old.
Still has ashtrays in the side of the door.
So,
that is so cool.
We get in the plane. We take off from Minden Airport. We're looking and looking, and we can't find it. So, you know, we're not going to waste a plane trip. He takes us up above the clouds. He tells me to grab a hold of the steering wheel, and I fly it for a minute.
Oh, my.
And we fly over downtown Minden, and I can see my house from
my
the air.
Gosh.
Now, does he have to file a flight plan or anything with the airport?
I don't. It's Minden Airport. It's mostly private.
You're just flying around in there.
It's mostly private plane owners out there that rent out their hangars and everything.
So we never found the gator.
Didn't see the gator. Couldn't see it. It was spotted, and we cannot find this monster gator.
Now 17 feet long. This guy's earned the right to. Y'all aren't going to shoot it, are you?
I don't know. I don't know what the plan is. We've shot others.
Mm-hmm.
My mom has a bleached skull trophy from the one that she killed.
Wow. Wow.
So
if you have a more redneck weekend than that, let us know about it. Yeah.
Video pictures available on Ruben's website on his Facebook. 101.7 FM 710 Key.
Now more breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Kiel.
So Saturday, there's a guy in my Sunday school class. You probably remember Scott McLeod, SWEPCO.
Yes,
for years and years. He retired and then went to work for the Salvation Army. And where I think he's about to retire or has retired now from the Salvation Army.
Okay.
But he sent out an email to our Sunday school. I go to a men's class. And he said, hey, guys, I need bell ringers. Saturday was the first day for the Salvation Army to go out and start the holiday bell ringing. And so I went out there. I was going to do full Santa regalia. But Aaron, it was hot.
Yeah, too warm for that.
It was hot.
So standing you pulled out the Santa Bermudas? Sam's.
I did. I had Bermuda shorts and a bright red Santa Hawaiian shirt,
man.
With the Santa hat and white gloves and everything. So people loved it.
Do
much fun.
Do kids still think you're Santa, even if you're not in the suit?
Yes.
They really do. They come up and want a picture and the whole shebang.
Not always wanting a picture, but you can see the reactions.
They see you and they're like,
Like Saturday, it was,
really
they were very exciting. I had, I had the glasses. It was a lot of fun.
The suit changes everything around kids.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Every kid wants to come love on you.
Yes. And Saturday I had a little girl run up to me just in my Hawaiian shirt and give me a hug.
Oh, man.
Santa.
They want to behave.
So that was fun. So I got finished with that about 2:00 and no chair. So you're outside on your feet.
Mm-hmm.
Now it doesn't take much to ring that little bell, but
you're
moving and constantly. And I had some nice Christmas tunes going. I brought my little Bose speaker.
Yeah.
So I had some Christmas music going. But I got home about 2:00 and I said, okay, I'm going to chill for a little while. And my buddy texted me and he goes, dude, Deuce McAllister is signing autographs until 4:30 at, is it Total Wine?
Total Wine, on Uri.
It's new mm-hmm. It's an old Conn's location. So this place is huge.
Oh, big, lot of wine.
and alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
Because Crown Royal was sponsoring Deuce. I put on my Saint shirt and went up there, and he could not have been nicer.
You got to meet Deuce.
Got to meet Deuce.
Oh, how cool is that?
Legendary Saints running back. And he was so nice. It just made the whole thing worth it.
Wow.
It was so much fun.
That's incredible. What a great story.
I know. And then it was, and then my best friend's wife was in line with a big old bottle of Crown Royal in a box. It was a special Saints edition. And she goes, what are you doing here? I said, well, Charlie text me. She goes, well, Merry Christmas.
Yeah.
She was in line to get it signed for me.
Wow.
So that was, it was fun. She goes, but you're not getting it until Christmas.
Yeah, you can't have it. That's so cool. Folks from Ukraine are joining us in studio coming up after 8 o'clock. An amazing story about a teenager who was held captive and is now free, and what he went through when he was a Russian prisoner.
Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel. Mike and McCarty in studio. Okay, Aaron, I'm going to see if I can get this. I can do Melinda Herring.
Good.
I got that one.
Yay.
Yes. Katya Pavlyovich.
Super.
Not bad.
Ah. Mykola Kuleba.
Yeah.
Did I get it close? Get real close to that.
Yeah.
Mykola. Now, you're here to tell the story of Daniel. Melinda, I'm going to let you start and introduce everybody a little bit better than I was able to do, and why we're here.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks, Aaron. It's so wonderful to be back in Shreveport. This is my third trip here. My name is Melinda Herring, and I work for Razum for Ukraine. Razum means together in Ukrainian, and we are an American-Ukrainian organization. We're headquartered in New York City. I work in the D.C. office. We've raised more than $200 million for Ukraine since the full-scale war started back in February of 22. And today I brought one of my heroes, Mike. His name is Mykola Kuleba. He's the CEO of a nonprofit organization called Save Ukraine, and he's rescued more than 1,000 Ukrainian children. Your listeners may or may not know this, but Vladimir Putin, the president of Russia, he and his government have kidnapped more than 20,000 Ukrainian children since 2022. And I can't think of anything worse. So we're here in Shreveport because in August, I invited two of your wonderful pastors from Cypress Baptist Church, Pastor John Bodine and Pastor Victor Herrera, and they came to Kiev with me. They prayed at the National Prayer Breakfast, and they met other evangelicals, people like all of us in Shreveport. And I took them out to Kiev to see Mykola and see his facility. So we're here today. We went to Cypress Baptist Church, and we got a warm reception, and it was really encouraging. They prayed with Mykola, and we also told the story of Daniel. And Daniel is one of the returned children that Save Ukraine has helped.
Mm-hmm. He was 12 when he was kidnapped, right?
That's right. So he's from the city of Kherson, which is in the south. And his mother's name is Alla. And the two of them are here in the United States telling that story. The Russians held him for 6 months. And he was eventually released because of Save Ukraine and because of his mother's persistence. And the family would say because of the love of God and the persistence of his family.
Mykola, we have to ask you, this battle that Ukraine is in, it seems to be on the back burner. People are forgetting about it. They're not talking about it anymore. What are you having to do to make sure that we remember there are still people being killed?
Yeah. Good morning, Shreveport. Yeah. Today I'm here just for 2 days with my statement that Ukraine is being slowly but surely erased from the map, beginning with its children and everyday boys and girls disappeared behind a new iron curtain taken from the schools, orphanages, and their families. And their names are changed, their languages silenced, their face forbidden. And Russia is not only destroying cities, it's annihilating an entire generation, reshaping innocent children into instruments of war. And Save Ukraine, it is the largest organization which I run and created 10 years ago after first invasion happened. And we We operate like underground railroad to search these children, and our investigators searching them because of only official information verified by Ukrainian government that 20,000 Ukrainian children have been kidnapped. But Russia, two years ago, Russian officially registered 700,000 Ukrainian children in Russia. Yeah, they registered Ukrainian children in Russia, but still now we don't know.
So what does that mean? They registered 700,000.
They forcibly transferred these children with families, without families. They've been deported there, and still we have no idea how many of them unaccompanied minors or children whose parents were killed, arrested, disappeared. And these 20,000 kids I mentioned, it's only who've been verified, but a real number unknown. That's why our organization rescuing them from Russia captivity and bringing them to their relatives and helping unaccompanied minors and orphans to heal their trauma.
Katya, can you tell us a little bit about Daniel's story? He's 16 now. Tell us when he was kidnapped and what happened with him.
Thank you for the question. I'm Katya Pavlovich. Thank you for a warm welcome here. And I've been advocating on the issue since 2022. And stories of children proved to be the most, you know, powerful statement and proof of this heinous crime. So I met Daniel when he came here in person. He is a beautiful 16-year-old boy, looks exactly like his mother, only taller. Like talking to him, you would never be able to tell that he went through such an awful journey. So they were living in the city of Kherson, which is south of Ukraine. And during when Russia occupied them, there was a lot of like heavy fighting, and occupation is absolutely devastating. So Russian authorities would pressure families to send children away and try and, you know, to manipulate them or bribe them or persuade, hey, your child will be better off somewhere, you know, in Crimea, for example. And in Crimea, there are a lot of sanatoriums and child summer camps because it's a beautiful summer destination. Russia occupied it back in 2014, so 10 years ago. So they established their full-on, like, government now. At some point, Danilo's mother just signed the documents and thought maybe a kid could take a break from all this shelling, from all this occupation. And they promised to return Daniel in 2 weeks. And when 2 weeks passed, she went to the teachers and school directors asking, where's my kid? And they just ghosted her. They just went radio silence. Nobody wanted not only to take responsibility, but even answer her what happened. And this was around the time when Russians have been squeezed out of the south. So they blew up the bridge, the only bridge that connects Kherson and Crimea. So from Kherson to Crimea, you can generally drive within a couple hours. But
for locals, it's like from Shreveport to Baton Rouge.
Okay.
Yeah, give or take.
Can you stay with us? Because I want to find out, how did we finally get Daniel free?
Yes, absolutely.
Can y'all stick around? Cool.
Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.
Big stories of the day with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
In studio, Mykola Kulaba from Ukraine. I'm Katya. I'm gonna butcher it. Pavlayovich.
You've got it.
Oh my. Pavlayovich.
Pavlovich.
Pavlovich.
Yes. Okay.
Thank you. And Melinda Herring. Melinda, I got. You're from Alaska, so that was easier. In studio, talking about. Tell us about. Now we were talking about Daniel, the 12-year-old that was kidnapped by Russia. How was he eventually freed?
So the good thing that happened is Daniel and his mother stayed in touch, and Daniel saw that some children could be picked up and returned by parents. His mother did not know how to execute the journey because, like, the only way was cut off. So Daniel found out from other children about Save Ukraine, and he got the phone number of the hotline where you could call and, you know, report that you are missing or you're looking for someone. Save Ukraine was able to...
Which is Mykola's organization.
Mykola's organization. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they were able to connect Daniel and his mother and help his mother travel all around from the south of Ukraine after it was liberated through Poland, Belarus, Russia, all the way to Crimea. The whole journey took 2 weeks. The mother, Alla, was interrogated in Moscow airport for 14 hours. Mm-hmm. No food, no water. And some of the other women who went to return their children, including a granny who was looking for a granddaughter, just didn't survive the trip. Mm. Her heart just failed during the interrogation. And when she arrived to pick up her son, she had to tell on Russian TV that it was her fault that she didn't pick him up on time, that Russia helped him return. And there was this whole propaganda piece. So,
speaking of propaganda, Mykola, why are the Russians taking these children? What is the end game for them?
700,000
yes.
children.
It's all children from boys and girls as young as 11 learn to assemble weapons in their school, even children in kindergarten. And Russian soldiers come into their schools and train these kids and throw grenades and salute Russian flag. It's Russian military education and brainwashing, and many thousands of Ukrainian children have been sent to Russia to re-educational camps to turn them into Russian children and then turn them into Russian soldiers because many kids taken to the military academies. We were rescuing these kids from military academies, even from Russian army. I can tell you a story that one 15 years old boy was killed as a Russian soldier. He died as a Russian soldier. Mm. Russia has many child soldiers, and their clear intention.
It's hard for us to even comprehend.
Yes,
this is hard really for us to imagine.
It is Russia. It's hard for you to understand, but Russia have a clear intention. Yeah, I can show you Russian history books for children now where it's United States is a evil. United States is aggressor. It's not a Russia invaded Ukraine. It's United States invaded Russia. And Russia fighting with NATO countries, with United States on Ukrainian land. Mm. And these children believe they are fighting with Ukrainian Nazi and with American soldiers on Ukrainian lands. It's Russian propaganda. It's totalitarian regime, like in North Korea, in totalitarian countries.
Right.
I can tell you tons of stories because we are rescued more than 1,000 kids from Russia captivity. And they're telling us how they've been forced to attend Russian school. And I'm asking children, what about school? Tell me. Oh, it's not just school. It's a military school because Russian soldiers coming to us and we handle weapons.
And Melinda, in our last minute or so here, you have another event happening this afternoon the public's invited to. Tell us about that, please.
Thanks, Aaron. So we are showing a fantastic film. It's called A Faith Under Siege, and it's at LSUS. It's at 5 p.m., and it's a film about how Russia has persecuted particularly evangelical Christians in occupied Ukraine. This is the area of Ukraine that the Russians have taken since 2022. And they've done terrible, unspeakable things to Christians, particularly ministers. Mykola Kuleba, the man who's sitting next to me, is part of this film. He's an evangelical Christian. You'll meet a lot of interesting people who are inspired to take care of Ukraine's children, to take care of the grannies that are left behind. And it's because of their Christian faith. We also will be joined by Pastor John Bodine from Cypress Baptist Church and Pastor Victor Herrera. So that's at 5 p.m. tonight.
Daniel will be there,
and okay. You'll get a chance to meet him and his mother, Alla. And they are incredible people.
Wow.
I'm begging you, please stand with us and pray with us, because many evangelicals persecuted in occupied territories, and we need American support. And we're asking you, please, don't forget about what happened in Ukraine now.
And
what
your organization is Save Ukraine.
Save Ukraine, rescuing abducted children from Russia and occupied territories.
Thank y'all for coming in. Amazing story. Amazing story.
Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel, and on the free Keel app.
Back Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
By the way, I meant to ask you, on the way in, I noticed the Mega Million sign was back down to $50 million. Who could live on that $50 million?
You're really going to bring this up today?
So I'm assuming since you're here this morning...
It wasn't me.
You didn't win that $980 million.
No. No. I won 20 bucks.
You did win.
I won all of 20 bucks. Yeah. One winning ticket in the Mega Millions.
One ticket.
Sold in Georgia.
Is there a report on how many tickets were sold?
I don't know, but the odds are 290 million to one to match all six numbers. So I don't know why somebody doesn't buy 290 million tickets.
So were 290 million sold then? Is that what that means?
I don't know. I don't know what that means. I just don't know why you don't just do all combinations of all numbers. And that would cost you about $300 million.
Well.
And then you'd win $900 million.
Okay.
But if you
do
did
I just
that,
go and go, I need to borrow $300 million?
You need to fill out every one of those little forms so you get a random, you get every number combination. You couldn't quick pick it because you'd get duplicates. So you'd have to go fill out the little
logistically,
dots.
It wouldn't even be possible.
You couldn't do it. It would take you an army of 1,000 people to do it for over 10 days. It wouldn't be possible. And then that would be the ticket where four tickets split it.
Okay, so. Would now be the time to buy? Are your odds better because not nearly as many people are going to play for $50 million as they were for $980 million?
They say the odds are the same no matter what.
The odds are the same because you're not playing against other people. You're playing against the numbers.
Numbers.
Okay.
And the lump sum jackpot for this stupid Georgia ticket, $452 million before taxes. So lop off about
before
a third.
Before taxes?
Yep, lop off about a third for taxes. And then they're going to take home, cash in hand, about $300 million, something like that, if I can do the math in my brain. So, a lot of money.
I don't know why that pisses me off. Don't advertise $980 million.
I know. Government
because
wants
it's
their
not.
Money. Well, it is if you take it over 20 years, but what idiot would do that? Not me.
I don't think it even is then.
No, you still got to pay tax on it. Still got to pay tax.
Coming up.
Chris Crackman's going to join us. We're going to talk about the town of Vivian and the horrifying loss of a police officer there and what you can do to help.
Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.
Let's get back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Probably heard at this point, Vivian police officer was shot and killed, issuing a warrant. A man was barricaded inside his house and was later arrested, charged with second degree murder now. Mm-hmm. Caddo Parish Commissioner of that district, Chris Crackman, joining us. Chris, first of all, thank you for jumping on with us. We appreciate it.
No, you bet. How are y'all?
Well, we're doing okay. How's the town of Vivian this morning?
Well, you know, it's pretty somber with grief, and I believe it will be for some time.
Did you know Mark Brock?
I did not. We had crossed paths several times. Matter of fact, last I saw him was the homecoming parade for North Caddo. I didn't know him personally. I do know the family of his fiance.
Last night they held a candlelight vigil at the stadium there in North Caddo. Describe that for us. That I mean, just the grief and the love of everyone coming together had to be kind of emotional.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's a shame, you know, when folks are living, I don't think they realize how many lives they touch, you know, and last night, just showed how many lives that Officer Brock had touched. You know, there were hundreds of people in the bleachers, and I think they had everything set up, you know, somewhere around the 30-yard line or so, but the bleachers were packed.
I have a retired Shreveport police officer in my Sunday school class, and we were talking about this yesterday, and he said, guys, you know, this affects the entire town of Vivian. It's a small community. It's a very close-knit community.
Absolutely. And the thing is a young man that's this unique is very, very rare. He's 25 years old. He's a T-ball coach. He's on the board of directors of the Vivian Athletic Association. He's an assistant coach for North Caddo, and he's a police officer. I mean, for somebody that young with no children of his own to be such a volunteer and pillar is such a rarity. So it's not just the loss of a good officer. It's a good loss of a liaison of everything that is good within our communities.
The other thing that people think about, we know how big the Shreveport Police Department, the Bossier Police Department is. The Vivian Police Department is a small unit. How many officers do they have, Chris?
I'm unsure of how many they have. I think you can count them on both hands. There's not very many. And like y'all said, you know, it's a very small, tight-knit community. Everybody knows everybody. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is going to touch and affect our communities up here for a very, very long time.
How can folks help Mark Brock's family? I know there's been a meal train, some other things set up. What's the best way to help?
Right, there have, and I think there's actually been an account set up to donate to the family to get them through this hard time, as well as his fiance, I believe. And I want to say the Vivian Chamber of Commerce has been sharing everything on their social media. So if everybody would jump on there and check that out, because I'm sure it's going to take a while. Mm-hmm. For the family to get back on their feet after something like this.
Talking with Caddo Parish Commissioner's District, Vivian is in. Chris, has there been any announcement on the services yet?
No, sir, there hasn't.
Then that'll be one of those things where so many so many law enforcement folks will come for that from all around the state. I assume the sheriff's office will help patrol Vivian at that time. This is just one of those things that in law enforcement, they turn out, right?
Oh, absolutely. And that's another, I would like to mention, you know, Friday night we were gearing up to go to the playoff game at Northwood High School. And, you know, I'm standing in my front yard and I'm hearing siren after siren after siren and my heart is breaking. I'm on the phone with the mayor. We're trying to figure out what we can do and what's going on. But I say that to say this, you know, there were officers from so many different enforcement agencies, all the way from Minden. There were officers from Minden that came, Bossier, Life Air, North Caddo Medical Center, the Sheriff's Department. I mean, a lot of these agencies really knocked it out of the park. There's 9 municipalities up here, and I think there was an officer from every single agency. If somebody had a badge on their chest Friday night, they were in Vivian. Mm. And so it was the response was outstanding, and I cannot thank those guys enough.
Chris, we thank you for jumping on with us, and our thoughts and prayers are with those in Vivian this morning.
You bet.
All right, guys. Thank you all so much.
Thanks.
Thank you. Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Key.
Breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
I told you I went to Sam's on Uri, rang the bell for the Salvation Army for a couple of hours. It was like noon to 2. Well, LSU kicked off, what, 11:30?
Yeah, 11:30 or 11:45.
So
yeah.
I'm like, okay, I'm not gonna hope nobody says anything. Mm-hmm. And it was funny because Aaron, people would come up to Sam's and they had LSU gear on.
Oh yeah.
So I'm trying to judge how they look. Okay, do they look happy?
Right, yeah, exactly.
I didn't want to ask anybody. So I didn't start the game until like 3 o'clock.
Oh my.
That afternoon.
Okay.
When I got home. And then I was talking to my buddy yesterday, and I didn't get to finish it because I ran up to
Total Wine
to get Deuce McAllister's autograph and got to meet Deuce. Mm-hmm. It was so nice.
So you had to watch the game way later than the rest of us.
So my best friend met me up there, and he goes, well, what'd you think of the game? I was like, I haven't seen it yet. I haven't seen it.
Hush up, yeah.
He goes, oh, okay. I said, and then I finally go, do I want to watch it? Do I want it? And he goes, well, do you want me to? I said, yeah, just tell me. He goes, yeah, you want to watch it.
Yeah. Maybe you want to watch the second half, not the first. Yeah.
Yeah. But how about the freshman running back?
Yeah.
Sliding, not running it in. How tempting would it be to get a touchdown? You want to pad your stats or whatnot. Mm-hmm. But he didn't. He iced the game.
Iced the game.
Essentially sealed the win for LSU.
Got your first down. Now you can kneel it and run the clock out. And it was perfect. And I thought, that's good. Now we're bowl eligible. We can go to one of the bowls this year.
We're going
to
be at the Des Moines, Iowa Tidy Bowl, but still, we're bowl eligible.
Probably the Birmingham Bowl or something like that. Yeah, well, we'll see. But we're going to go to a bowl game, and we play Western Kentucky this weekend. That should be a gimme. We should win that one.
So the Independence Bowl, we'll have to reach out to Missy. The Independence Bowl does not have an SEC connection now.
No, they don't. They
Would
have,
there be any way LSU could end up in the Independence Bowl?
I don't think it's likely. I think they got to go with Big 12 and Conference USA first. And then I think they have a backup plan with Pac-12, Conference, maybe Sun Belt backup too. She can explain it all, but... we know what happened last year when Marshall decided not to play. They decided not to play in the bowl game. And so we recruited Louisiana Tech, who they only had a 5-7 record. So they weren't even bowl eligible. But they agreed to step up and play and against Army. So, you know, could something, an anomaly like that happen again? Possibly. But, you know, Marshall had to pay a $100,000 fine for ditching us. So.
Really?
Yeah.
What was their excuse?
They had too many players enter the portal, and they were leaving.
That's right.
They were leaving the school,
That's
so they
right.
didn't have enough people to man a team. And I get that. That's a problem. You know, if you've got a lot of
right.
kids who decide they're
it's
leaving.
Ridiculous.
You know, who knows? If you're, because their head coach, I think at the time, Huff, I think he was leaving Marshall to go to Southern Miss.
Right, that's
and
right.
And so they decided if he's not going to be here, I'm out. It was a mess, so. Yeah, they had to punt, and Louisiana Tech came in and saved the day.
Right.
So we don't. Who knows what could happen in bowl games these days?
Right. All right. Well, glad you're back. Glad you're feeling well.
Yeah, feeling good.
And we'll see you in the morning. 101.7 FM, 710 KEEL, Micah McCarty.